You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
This holiday season, choose gifts that feel thoughtful and practical with Omaha Steaks. Whether you're hosting or gifting, they deliver the world's best steak experience, and it makes you look like you planned way ahead. They've got USDA-certified tender steaks, juicy burgers, comfort meals, and tons more. Gifting Omaha Steaks is honestly one of the easiest wins. Everything arrives beautifully packaged, super convenient, and the quality is unbelievable. Their filet mignons are some of the most tender I've ever had. And the variety means you can personalize every gift. Plus, orders placed by 6 p.m. Eastern ship same day. And everything is backed by their 100% guarantee. It's holiday gifting made simple. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All The Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code T-Bone at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, code T-Bone.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
And welcome into this foggy Thursday morning on the Big 870 WWL. I'm Don Dubuque. Normally you would hear me on a Saturday morning doing the fishing reports, but I've been called to duty filling in for Tommy Tucker this week. Tommy will be back with you on Monday, but we've got a great lineup of guests to talk with this morning. And we started off with talking with a gentleman who has written a book called Reviving Our Republic, 95 Theses for the Future of America. His name is Michael Biedenbaugh. He is a Navy veteran, civic reform advocate, and he believes it's time for a national reset. And he has created a citizen-led Project 2026, and it urges Americans to rise up above partisanship and reclaim the principles that built this nation: liberty, accountability, and unity. And this book is more like a blueprint then reads like a novel, and it's he's put a lot of time and research in it, and it's been called a very bold call to reclaim America. And Michael joins us now. Michael, thanks for being with us, and thank you so much for sending me your review copy of the book. It's very interesting as well as entertaining.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to be on with y'all.
Tell me about the reason why you wrote this. What did you see that caused you to put out this book, which features your Project 2026 and the goals, which we'll get into a little bit later on, and those 95 theses?
Well, I've always been civic-minded. I took international studies in college. I've always had the sense that once I became aware of how our nation was working, I started becoming even more aware of how it stopped working. As you know, I'm 64 now. I started seeing this 40 years ago, the slippery slope. And what really woke me up was in August of 2015, where the Republican presidential debate showed me how vulgar our politics are getting ready to turn. And that prompted me to go ahead and put the ideas together. And I was prompted by George Washington's farewell address, where he basically, after 8 years in office, before he left office, gave us an owner's manual of how to keep the republic working and what not to do and what to be careful of. And in studying that, I realized we've ignored every one of those. So I put the book together and created policy points around his warnings, and that's what's in the book.
You make a lot of references to some of our nation's founders, and I tell you, from reading it, I learned more about George Washington than I'll ever learned in grammar school or high school or any of the universities I went to. So I know you. I would say he's your hero.
Well, I am convinced our nation would not have existed without him being at the helm. Every revolution that ever overthrew a government in almost every other country turned immediately into a civil war among the revolutionaries, except ours. And he helped a society that was able to hold on to a civil structure at least 67 years until our inevitable civil war that we did have, and which helped constitutional law get a footprint and a hold and a toehold into our society. So thank goodness he was there to do that.
In your book, you discuss your Project 2026. So explain what Project 2026 is.
Well, it's my answer to Project 2025. So right now, sitting on my desk is a 3-inch thick book of almost 1,000 pages of where the Heritage Foundation has created, you know, they saw the same problems I saw, how our dysfunction of our central government is happening. But unfortunately, their solution is to double down on more control in the central government through the executive. And that is the most anti-American thing we can do. So I had already written my book, and I just said, well, my book is for Project 2026, which is to try to get folks to be inspired, hopefully by the book, to look at the policy points in here and say, I want to run for Congress, or either incite congressmen to see it as a way to create a fulcrum caucus, a group of 15 or 20 people and the whole House of Representatives could control the House. And I was thinking, you know what, it would be so amazing if these people could try to put these reforms in and put our country back on the track of being a free federalized republic where powers separated between the states, the central, and also the checks and balances that should be in our central government, which pretty much don't exist anymore.
Now, you would compare those men and women to the Minutemen of 1776 to rise up and help, you know, organize and resolve what the problems are that we have right now. Michael, if you stay with me, we're going to take a traffic break. And when I come back, I want you, we'll go through your Project 2026 goals, what they are, and how do you think they can be accomplished. We're talking with Michael Biedenbaugh. He is the author of Reviving Our Republic, 95 Theses for the Future of America. We'll be right back after this on the Big 870 WWL. And thank you for joining us on this Thursday morning. Don Dubuque in for Tommy Tucker, and our guest is Mike Biedenbaugh. And as America nears its 250th birthday, he believes we should get this country back to the principles, virtues that this country was founded on. He's laid out a thesis of 95 theses for the future of America, and it's a citizen's call to restore our nation's principle. And, Mike, you list several goals of Project 2026, the first of which is term limits. Explain what that would do and how do we get there?
Well, when the Constitution was written, the most important office was the president, and that was the one they were concerned with going perpetual power. But our representatives and our senators have now, since we've become a worldwide monetary and military empire, they have so much power that they're able to keep themselves in place, and we need to learn to cycle them through. We have to go back to citizen representatives, but it takes systems in place to mitigate the excesses of marketing and manipulation of message that keeps these people in perpetual power. We have to break that cycle.
Mike, you also mentioned clarified personhood. Explain that.
Well, I think this is one of the things that a lot of people don't understand about how corporations have been deemed persons. And it's part of law for the past century. And that's why Citizens United One was because textualists with the Constitution see persons in the Constitution and corporations have legal personhood. So the way to fix that is to separate. We need to put into the Constitution a differentiation of separation between natural persons, citizens, and artificial personas, and give the level of rights to natural persons instead of the corporations. And that will help fix the issue of money and money into the political system, I believe.
In keeping with that, you also mentioned curbing monopolies.
Yeah, so we have allowed corporate monopolies to consolidate power in a way that has extracted wealth out of communities and made it more difficult. In a capitalist society like ours, capitalism can pool, capitalism can collect, and it goes to centers like large cities, urban areas, out of the rural areas. And so we used to have curbs on that. Technology kept it from happening. But also things like the Communications Act of 1996 that allow the consolidation of media. And that's what we're living in now, where media is for profit, news making is for profit and entertainment instead of information. And where most of our media, airwave media, is now controlled by 7 corporations instead of 50 years ago, it was close to 80 to 90. We have to break that up and allow local communities to have the power to have a voice and attract advertisers like they used to be able to.
Well, fortunately, here at this station, we certainly honor free speech, going both ways, out and in. Mike, also restoring fiscal discipline. This is a biggie.
This is a huge one. We are doing nothing but utilizing the income tax to have a constant flow of capital and revenue into the federal government that they just feel like they can spend and spend and spend. And we have to get a hold of that. And even last night during President Trump's speech, he talks about what money he's going to give away. You know, we have to understand that the debt we're living on now is what is leading to inflation, is what is leading to low quality of life. And we have to rein in on that. And one of my theses in there is to have a long-term goal to put more focus of the income tax on states so states can pay for their responsibility, first responders, the mental health issues, the schools, because now those institutions and states have to go to the feds and borrow or get grants to try to support that. We have to turn that around and realize that we're borrowing against our grandchildren's future. We have to stop that.
Mike, you know, there's a quote, and I don't know who it's attributed to, that says all politics are local. And you also are supporting in one of your goals to rebalance federalism, where you would empower states and local communities to govern closer to home and reduce all this dependence on Washington centralized control. Mike, I just got about a minute to go, and I want to make sure I let people know how they can find your book. I think it's an excellent read, and it is a bold goal that you've set for yourself here and for the rest of the country, but perhaps they'll pick it up and run with it. So tell us how they can find your book.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, it's on. I have revivingourrepublic.com, where you can learn more about the book and about the mission. But it's on Amazon, Reviving Our Republic. Put that in Amazon, you'll find it. Last 2 weeks ago, it was in the top 20 for civic and history. So it's being responded to. People are getting it. And thank you so much for helping me to share the fact that we need states to take on more responsibility. It's not about states' rights. States' responsibilities. That's Absolutely. What's important. We need to learn the value of that.
Absolutely. Michael, I think this book should be in every school, too. I think there's some excellent points in it that they would learn a lot. Thanks for being with us. We appreciate it, Mike. Have a happy holidays
so
and Merry
Christmas. Merry Christmas.
You do the same. Michael Biedenbaugh, Reviving Our Republic. All right, it's 6:30, time for news. Let's go to the WWL News Center with Ian Ozan. You know, when they approached me and said, Tucker's taking a week off and we need you to fill in for this week. And I said, well, yeah, I'll do it. But there's one on one condition, that I get to do the agriculture and forestry report with Mike Strain. And they said, OK, it's a deal. It's written into the contract. So here he is, Mike Strain, our agriculture commissioner. Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Listen, I passed by your place the other day, and I got to tell you, your pasture is looking really good. But for a while there, the grass was getting kind of high. Was that some kind of a strategy because of the drought, or was it a, more of like a tractor problem or something?
Well, it was actually twofold. One, you know, I raise bees, and so what I do, I let most of my grass go to seed and go to head and let the flowers grow, and then I go in and mow it. And the second part of it was, you know, it was, you know, I cut it twice a year, and I hadn't gotten it done. And so, you know, it's one of those things, those conditions there have to be just right for a lot of that pasture so that I don't rut it up. So two things. So I do let it grow long and let it go to seed, and then I mow it. So there's a little strategy there. But also, you know, it's you know, you got to be home to cut the grass, right?
And right.
So, yeah, that's the other part of that. So, yeah, so we mow it twice a year. Bush hog it, and it takes a couple of days to get it all done.
Yeah, I got to keep those bees happy. Hey, you get around. I understand you just came back from the UK.
Yes, we did. I went over there on a trade mission with Drax. Drax, as you know, imports wood products from Louisiana and brings it to the United Kingdom. And we went to meet with Drax officials, also with the United Kingdom, their ministers, their Department of Energy, and Net Zero. They have a department with there. We met with our U.S. ambassador and their entire team. I went and I had a number of legislators with me. We bring the chairman of the committees with us, the ag committees and other legislators, and as well as the industry officials. And the trade mission, you know, began to go and visit with Drax, visit with the British officials and interested parties, because one of the things that we are really working hard so that they understand in throughout the United Kingdom is that our forests are farms, and there's a big difference, you know, and because you have the Euro and the Europeans with the deforestation issues, where there's a pushback now against using natural products, renewable natural products, to generate electricity or other uses. And we explained it to them. They said, look, it says, you know, y'all drink tea here? Well, of course. They said, use sugar? Well, of course. Well, that's a five-year crop. Our timber is from pine plantations, and we cut it 12 to 15 years, depending if you're in North or South Louisiana. The first cutting, you finish cutting at 20 and 25 and replant. So the only difference between sugar and timber is that the cycle of the crop is about 3 years longer. That's it, and it's infinitely renewable. And when you go over there, we went to the Drax power station. We took the bullet train, which you need to ride one if you haven't done that. Runs about 200 miles an hour to York. And York, where the Drax power station is, and it is the largest generation station probably, you know, in the world that utilizes biomass. It uses wood chips. And they were, you know, they have six turbines. They run four and have two on standby. It produces 7 to 8% of the entire United Kingdom, not England, the entire United Kingdom's electricity. They have a single grid. And 80% of the wood products come from Southeast Louisiana, and about 80% of that comes from Louisiana. So we export 2.5 to 3 million metric tons of timber to that one facility. So it leaves by ship out of the Port of Baton Rouge. It comes down by barge from the other facilities as well to the Port of Baton Rouge. There are three ports in England where it unloads, and there are trains, about seven trains a day that Drax owns. And a carload, a train car, those big train cars last 7 minutes. So we were there to firm that relationship up and that ongoing discussion. You saw yesterday where the European Parliament voted to delay their deforestation rules for another year. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And because, one, now the cost of living in Europe and the cost of living in England has gotten so high, their electricity across the board for industrial use is four times what ours is. I'm going to repeat that, four times. They rely on solar and wind, and then they supplement that with coal, natural gas, and, of course, with wood. But their main sources they're trying to use are solar and wind. And you know what? If you get a gloomy day, and if you've ever been to the United Kingdom, you know, when they dance in the streets when the sun comes out because it's always gloomy. And you have days without wind. And so that makes it difficult. And we will be returning. I will be returning. There's a discussion, and I've offered to do a lecture series throughout the United Kingdom and explain our timber, because they think cutting a tree is like cutting a, you know, a 100 or 200 year old tree out of the Sherwood Forest and using that for electricity. So we're trying. They don't have farming as we do. They don't have large scale. You don't see corn and beans and cotton and large farms, and you definitely don't see timber there. So that was
they can learn an awful lot from you, Mike, on with regard to renewable resources. Mike, we're going to take a traffic break. We come back, I want you to talk about the good news for the farmers. Got some federal government aid coming to farmers. We're talking with Louisiana's Agriculture and Forestry Commissioner Mike Strain right now. It's time for traffic. Let's see, look through this fog and see if we can find Joe Cardosi. Yeah, there he is. Joe Cardosi got the traffic report for you. And back with the Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry, Mike Strain. Mike, when we left, you were talking about the good relationship we have with the UK as far as liking Louisiana timber. They also like our rice?
Absolutely. They actually asked us to come over there and do a presentation on rice. So we went to the Rice and Flour Millers Association, which is the guild that it oversees all of that, and it's in a very old historic building that Winston Churchill used to live in. Everything's rather formal there. And then we went on to one of their large importers and distributors. They love Louisiana rice. And we're working, and I was working yesterday. They want us to send them milled packaged rice. They will put their label on it, but a product of the USDA. And so they're very proud. Our rice is consistent. Our rice is uniform. Our hot rice is safe. And our rice is just simply the best. We have the best rice in the world here in Louisiana with our soil and with our farmers, and its uniformity, consistency, and price. And so they're going to import about 500 to 590,000 metric tons, and we can supply that or a big portion of that. And the reason we're doing these trade missions all over the world, and all the ag commissioners are doing that, and specifically is to increase our export markets, increase our opportunities to sell these products, and not rely just on China, on any single country. And so right now, Todd and I are working, my executive assistant, confidential assistant. We've been asked to go to the Ivory Coast. We're looking at that. And again, to sell rice and food products, because that's the only way we're going to get these commodity prices up. The commodity prices have been below break even for 3 years, pretty much across the board, with the exception of sugar. And we've got to fix that. Because I met with our bankers yesterday at the Louisiana Bankers Association, all the ag lenders. I was with them. I gave them about an hour talk, and we visited for quite a while. It's the bankers, have been making these loans, and we're very concerned about where we're going next year and the next couple of years. So the influence that I can have, in addition to helping to fund research and that, is to open more markets and sell our products.
Mike, I just got a few seconds left. Good news for farmers coming down about farmer aid. Briefly tell us about that.
Yes, the farmer aid, and that is an aid package to help offset what's going on with the low commodity prices. It's about a third, 25 or 30% of what they actually lost, but the bankers are excited. We need this payment to help pay down the loans from this year so we can get a loan from next year. We expect to know the exact numbers on about the 20th of December and the funds to flow by the first week of February.
That is some excellent news. Mike, thanks for all the information you give us. Have some happy holidays and a Merry Christmas. And I know you've got a gumbo plan. You got your holiday gumbo coming up.
Oh, I am. We're going to have a beautiful Christmas gumbo. We had a wonderful one for Thanksgiving crabs. We're going to have some shrimp in there. You can use crawfish if you like. You got to have some oysters, Louisiana rice. It's absolutely great.
I'm with you, Mike Strain. Thank you, Mike. We have a shout-out to one of our listeners' sweet great-nieces, Avery and Greta, the two kindest young women. Today is National Twin Day. If you want a shout-out, the text line is open for you at 504-260-1870. Joining us is Louisiana State Representative Jacob Breaux. Jacob, you don't have a twin, do you?
No, I do not. But, you know, I was listening to you earlier. It does seem like they do have a unique bond, especially identical twins like y'all were mentioning.
Yeah, it's kind of like they're on the same wavelength telepathically, and they finish each other's sentences. It's pretty remarkable to watch. Okay, tell us about this lawsuit. Who is being sued? Why are they being sued? What are they asking for? What is this all about? I'm familiar with the bridge, and I know it caused me a lot of headaches because I go to Plaquemines Parish. That's part of my fishing and hunting playground down there.
Sure,
and I started taking an alternative route because of it, and then it got finished, and then they put tolls on it, and people were complaining, and businesses were losing money. Tell us what the deal is.
Right. So when, you know, somebody comes from out of town and they don't know about that toll bridge and they don't know about that go-pass and you're pulling a boat, I mean, you're going to get a bill in the mail for over $60, which is just ridiculous, you know, to cross a man-made 12-foot deep canal. But, yeah, so the local government, Plaquemines Parish, filed a lawsuit last Friday. And what they're alleging, they're asking for, you know, declaratory injunctive relief and damages because they believe and I believe they have evidence of that their tax revenues are going down because their local, because this tolling bridge, the way it's set up and the way it's been operated, which I believe is poorly, is that the local businesses, it's suppressing their businesses and then, you know, suppressing their customer base and therefore going to suppress or lower the local government's, you know, tax revenues. So that's what it's about. And then it alleges a number of things in there. It sounds like now you got to remember that they've sued both the company that's built the bridge, Plenary Infrastructure. They've sued this company that the bridge company hired to operate the toll, CAPSH, and then they've also sued the state. So, you know, kind of got to be careful what I say here. But what it also alleges is that basically the company that built the bridge and the company that's doing the tolling operations didn't do everything that they were constitutionally required to do when they do a toll. And not to ramble on, but say, you know, say you come across that bridge and you want to contest that or challenge that toll. It appears that these companies did not go through the proper procedures to have an appeal process for that toll. So it's kind of like, you know, the fox guard and the hen house type of thing, to where if you wanted to contest that toll, if something was wrong, the license plate was wrong, the rate was wrong, whatever it may be, that basically the person that's charging the toll is deciding whether or not it was correct or not. You have no right to challenge that. So there's a lot of things involved in the lawsuit. It's going to be interesting to see how it develops.
How are you involved with it?
Well, so I'm the state rep. So I'm on the legislative side of things, not the, you know, the administrative or the executive side of things. So, you know, I want to try and find a fix to this. You know, I think I've myself and Senator Connix helped me. You know, we've done a very good job of bringing out the details of this up in Baton Rouge as to how bad of a process or really a failed experiment this public-private toll bridge has become. So we're going to try and hopefully find a legislative fix to this, which, you know, maybe may lead to some revision of that contract, a buyout of that contract. You know, I've been asking for what the buyout of the contract is for since I've been in office now, and I still haven't gotten that number. I've consistently gotten delays. You know, at first it was we didn't know what it was. We needed some tolling numbers and figures, and clearly we have that now. We had 4 months of tolling over the summer, and I still haven't gotten that buyout number. So we need that to work towards hopefully maybe bringing this thing to an end. So, you know, we'll see that and see how that works in the upcoming regular session this spring.
So who would become the new contractor?
Well, you know, that's all speculative, right? So, you know, the bridge itself is still not finished. I mean, it is almost going to be 2 years over its completion date. And the company, Plenary, is still getting fined $5,000 a day until it is completely done. So who would be the contract? You know, I think, again, it's a contract, right? So contracts can be negotiated as long as both parties agree. This one, you have a signed contract that was signed back in 2021. And as it unfolds, you know, the details of it get more disappointing. And I think that's partly why the local government filed the lawsuit, because they lose those tax revenues. And from what we understand is you know, the governor suspended the tolls on October 2nd. There were some informal conversations with the bridge contractor and the state government. I don't think that any resolved anything. And then I think they went, per the contract, they had to go to a formal mediation, which they did, I believe, last Tuesday. And from what I understand, nothing apparently productive came of that. And then you saw this lawsuit filed by the local government on Friday. So, Don, you know, it's complicated, right?
Yeah, sure.
So, and I think, you know, and then now lawyers are involved, and I think this thing will be litigated for some time now. And, you know, but currently the contractor is plenary, and, you know, overall, once the bridge is complete, you know, maybe there's an option, or there should be an option per the contract for a buyout. But as a legislator, I need to know what that number is so we can work towards a buyout.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break for traffic, Jacob. But when we come back, I want you to try to give us an idea of what the amount of the damages will be, who will be compensated if the lawsuit is won and it is awarded. We're talking with Jacob Breaux. He is Louisiana State Representative, about Plaquemines Parish filing that lawsuit over the Belle Chasse Toll Bridge. And I know it has been a real problem for a lot of local businesses there. There's been some impacts. I don't know if they stand the gain. I got a text in here from, let's say it was Karen, and she says she's still getting monthly toll tag statements, but she's not paying them. So evidently they're billing people who own the tags, but they're not being paid. Or I guess some people are paying them, and so will they get their money back? As Jacob said, it is a convoluted and complicated issue. All right, it's time for traffic. That's not very complicated. We just find Joe Cardosi somewhere out there in the fog, and he gives us a traffic update on what's going on as you do your daily or weekly commute on our highways and byways. What you got, Joe? All right, welcome back into WWL's First News. I'm Don Dubuque filling in for Tommy Tucker. We're talking with State Representative Jacob Breaux about the lawsuit Plaquemines Parish is filing. They're suing the Department of Transportation and Development, Plenary Infrastructure Belle Chasse, Plenary Louisiana Tolling, and CAPS Traffic.com USA. I don't think they missed anybody. Jacob, do we have any idea of what they're asking in damages and who will collect it?
Sure. So what happened during those 4 months of tolling, you had over $5.1 million in tolls billed to anyone that crossed the bridge, you know, Belle Chasse, wherever people may be from, or out of state, what have you. But there was also over almost $6.8 million in administrative fees. So what the lawsuit's, I think, attempting to try and do is one, the governor's already suspended the tolling. So October 2nd forward, there is no tolling. People should not be getting any new bills from that date forward. And then for the bills that occurred, from May through that October 2nd date are what I'm telling you about, the $6.8 million in administration fees and $5.1 million in tolls. And if the lawsuit is successful, those amounts would be have a full accounting, be reviewed, and then people would get, restitution or repayment for those amounts that they were charged. You know, I think we had one lady in when we had a committee meeting up in Baton Rouge, she was charged over $6,000, which is just ridiculous.
Okay, so 11.9, I guess that's 11,957,349. Yeah. That's administrative fees and tolls. What about damages lost to the businesses? Because they were claiming that the people weren't coming and it was costing them money, and then the parish was stands to miss out on the tax. So what's the ticket on that?
I think that's a yet to be determined number, right? Because I think the parish would have to go into their lawsuit and prove whatever revenues they lost during that period because of this tolling, which was done improperly, right? But you know, you have the first bridge where you got across that, you know, like I said, it was the Fox Guard and the Hen House, right? Where they did not provide, they did not go through the necessary procedures to have a proper tolling system and to have a proper appeal system to that tolling, where you basically had these private entities that clearly have a very strong incentive to maximize the tolls and the administration fees as much as they could be. So that's the first hurdle. And then after that, you know, that would be, I think, on the local government, on parish government, to try and get that number. Again, like I said, Don, this is going to be a lot of litigation and very complex, but at the same time, it seems like there's some very strong arguments here that are going to be debated in this lawsuit.
Yeah. Well, so do you think individuals would be able to recoup their money that they've paid already? Would it be paid back to them if the lawsuit's successful?
That's what it does at first glance in the lawsuit. Now, again, you know, the lawsuit's going to be litigated over a time period. There's going to be rulings from the judge and whatnot that'll affect all of these things. But yes, I think the lawsuit itself is looking for restitution of those, you know, whether it was tolls or the administration fees that were improperly charged. But you still have to cross that first hurdle where they have to successfully get a ruling that they were improperly done.
Well, thanks for explaining that all to us. And Jacob, I don't know when you decided to run for state representative, you were signing up for this legal activity. You do a good job at it. You sound like you might have some legal background.
I do. I'm a local attorney out here in Belchase, so I don't know how we'd be getting through this without that experience. But
glad to have you. All right, Jacob, thanks so much for the info. We appreciate it. Have a good
one. Thanks, guys.
There he goes, Jacob Rowe, Louisiana State Representative. All right, coming back after this, according to a new survey, 30% of Gen Z is afraid of making a phone call. Can you believe it? We'll explore that situation when we come back. But right now it's time for news. Let's send it over to the WWL Newsroom with Ian Ozan. For those of you not familiar with the designations, a Gen Zer would be someone born between 1997 and 2012, which would make them between 13 and 28 years of age. And I got to tell you, there's been some pretty strange things said about Gen Zers. There are some traits they're exhibiting. Joining us to talk more about this is Brenda Seary. Brenda is a hiring expert. In fact, she is the president and CEO of Corporate Connections with 20 years of industry experience in talent acquisition. Brenda, in acquiring talent for your clients, do you find that we've actually got these young people who just fear talking on the phone with telephobia?
I do, yes. They absolutely prefer text communication over phone communication anytime.
What do you think causes that? Is it just because they can text, they do, it's easier, it's less stressful and not quite as nervous, and you get to think out your thought before you send it as opposed to just speaking extemporaneously?
I do. I think that's a lot of it. It sort of gives them a little control, right? They can make sure that what they're saying sounds better than if they were in a conversation with you and have a fear of maybe stumbling over their words, right? So I do think it adds a level of control to the conversation on their part.
So what happens when you get an employee with telephobia? I mean, is there a way to help them overcome that?
I think it depends on the circumstances. I think if you have a remote employee, it's really easy for people to communicate on chat platforms within a company, right? There are several different platforms that could be used.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. It's about getting the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. And to find candidates who match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. Stop struggling to get your job post even seen on other sites. Give your job the best chance to be seen with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. They help you stand out and hire quality candidates who can drive the results you need. Sponsored Jobs boost your post for quality candidates so you can reach the exact people you want faster. Join the 1.6 million companies that sponsor their jobs with Indeed. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. You know, one of the perks about having four kids that you know about is actually getting a direct line to the big man up north. Mm-hmm. And this year, he wants you to know the best gift that you can give someone is the gift of Mint Mobile's unlimited wireless for $15 a month. Now, you don't even need to wrap it. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detecttheSOS.com today.
Use Teams being one of the most recognized. And if you're a manager and you've got an employee working from home, you can just reach out through Teams, ask the question you want to ask, and no conversation has to occur. However, if you're in an office, that adds a level of strain to these Gen Zers because they are going to be forced to have more of those face-to-face conversations.
I had no idea this was so prevalent. I've got some callers that are texting me now, and one says, everyone that she works with is telephobia, and I asked if they were Gen Z, and she says, yeah, and their job is to sell stuff. How do you sell stuff without talking to people over the phone?
Right? It's unfathomable what's going on, but I think back, I have a child who is a Gen Zer, and she, you know, that generation sort of is the first one who had cell phones, you know, for communicating at such a young age, where anyone, you know, millennial and above didn't have them so early on. And my daughter would text me from inside the house, and it made me so angry. I'd say, you can come talk to me. So I don't know if some of it is, you know, just learned behavior from a young age. And now there's just such a level of comfort with that, that they're really struggling to have face-to-face conversations.
I witnessed a group of teenagers at a high school football game. They were sitting on the same bench directly across from each other. And instead of talking, they were all texting.
Isn't that amazing?
And the ball game was exciting, and that was totally out of the question. But they were sitting there texting each other almost face-to-face, you know, instead of speaking.
Right.
I've got another text here that says, my Gen Z 16-year-old daughter has telephobia. She can only talk to her friends and close family comfortably on the phone. Anyone else, it's like pulling teeth.
Right. I think it's so interesting. I know I grew up in a generation where we had, you know, phones on the wall and long cords. And I remember sitting and talking to my friends for a long time and playing with that phone cord. And you know, it was just different generationally. And I can imagine, you know, what your viewer is saying, that it's very hard to have conversations if they're not comfortable. And there is a level of comfort that comes with texting, like I said, because they feel they have more control over the conversation.
Here's another one that says, my 26-year-old daughter is afraid to make a phone call, and she works at a theme park, so she deals with people all day long, but will not make a phone call. So I guess speaking person to person, she's okay. But when it goes through a phone, maybe there's something there that makes them nervous and afraid to do it. I don't get that.
I don't get it either. To be honest with you, I think it's absolutely scary to think about the fact that there's a whole generation of people who are afraid to verbally communicate over the phone.
And you would think that, you know, maybe teachers should really concentrate on that. You know, they always say that one of the biggest fears of people is public speaking, that they're just petrified. Mm-hmm. And now maybe it's also moved over to the telephone now.
Isn't that something? Yeah, it really is. I know I have a part-time job as an adjunct professor, and I teach master's degree students. So they are at the higher end of Gen Z. And they, a lot of them, you know, one of the things I make them do is stand up and give an elevator pitch to the class. Let everybody know in a matter of a couple of minutes who you are, why you're here, what your plans are for the future. And I'd say 90% of them are terrified to do it, shaking the whole time they're doing it. It's just an epidemic, I think.
Yeah, well, you know, I've also found that, you know, a lot of times if you get a young person, maybe a Gen Zer on the younger end, and they've got a fear of speaking, if you let them speak about something they're passionate about, I know some kids that are just crazy about hunting and fishing, and boy, they'll just rattle on with that, but try to get them involved in any other conversation, it's difficult, but maybe that will help bring them in. Brenda, if you would, stay with me for a second. We're going to take a traffic break. We come back. I want to find out more about what you do as talent acquisition, or the business that you have, the corporate connections. And also, we're listening. I got some more texts coming in. If you know someone that has telephobia, it's kind of a new thing, fear of talking on the phone, a phone call anxiety, you can text us. You don't have to talk. Just text us. 504-260-1870 is our talk and text line. But in this case, we'll accept the text. We'll be right back. But first, let's take a look at traffic with our traffic reporter, Joe Cardosi. Joe, how's the roads looking? All right, back with Brenda Seary. She is the president and CEO of Corporate Connections with over 20 years of the industry experience in talent acquisition. And we're talking about something she deals with her potential clients, and that is telephobia. And Brenda, I had no idea it was this extensive. I've got a whole list here of text messages that are coming in. And this one, and I'll share them with you. One says, Gen Xer here. It's not a fear of speaking on the phone. It's that some people are bullies when they speak, and I want the option to either ignore you or get my thoughts together to tell you off. Phone calls are annoying. Here's another one that says, phone phobia is very annoying. My secretary sends texts or emails to clients when I need immediate attention. I usually have to pick up the phone and do it myself. Her job, honestly, is in jeopardy because of this, but she doesn't correct the problem. Maybe she's listening. Another says, I have an 8-year-old currently whose school teaches them drama to help prevent this kind of phobia that Gen Zers are having with communicating. Another says, so many conversations about generations involve a generation criticizing the generation they raised. And yet it goes on and on. It says, every time my phone rings, though I've had a cell phone for at least 20 years of my life, as I've gotten older, I imagine the gut feeling I get is in some small way how people felt when air raid sirens rang out during World War II. Another has a question, don't they still teach speech in high school and college? But I don't know that teaching speech is the answer, because on the phone, it's different than face-to-face communicating. Brenda, it's for real, and I don't know, maybe we're in jeopardy of losing communication skills. Tell me about what you do with the talent acquisition. Let's say Don calls up Brenda and says, Brenda, I need somebody to do phone screening for me. Do you find the right person for me, and especially one that can't talk on the phone? We wouldn't need them.
Yes, that's exactly what I do. So I am officially a headhunter. So my job is to help my clients when they have very specific roles that they need filled. In the case of a phone screener, my client would give me a job description, and I'm sure that job description would be very clear about the fact that people have to be able to talk on the phone, that they have to be able to be empathetic and patient. And I would create a list of interview questions, and I interview every person face-to-face. I don't do phone interviews, and maybe that's easier on them, but it's my job to decipher if they have those skills and ask them very pertinent questions to find out if they could actually do that job before I present them to my client.
Got it. Wow. Well, thanks for joining us and talking about this and bringing this to our attention. I do think that, you know, definitely I think it should need to be reversed. Yeah, a lot of these people make very good arguments why texting is better. But, you know, there's also something lost in the text, and that's the voice inflection. And the way you say things have different meanings than the way the written word is. Don't you agree?
I agree with you 100%. And I would encourage, you know, people that are listening today that are parents of, you know, children to adults in the Gen Z range, spend more time talking with your kids face to face. When you're together, maybe start playing board games with them instead of letting them go off and play video games. I just think that the art of communication really starts at home. So I would encourage parents to communicate more verbally as well.
Thanks for being with us, Brenda. Enjoyed the conversation.
You're welcome. Take care, Don.
All right. Brenda Seary with the Corporate Connections. All right, we'll be back with more of the Tommy Tucker Show. I'm Don Dubuque, filling in right after this. All right, again, the holidays can be an exciting time, but not always merry and bright. There was a survey from the American Psychological Association found that 9 out of 10 adults feel stressed at this time of year. Joining us to talk about taking care of your emotional well-being is Dr. Brent Wallace, also known as Dr. B. Dr. B, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Don. It's good to talk to you.
Same here. Tell us about emotional well-being. What is it?
Yeah, so really emotional well-being is kind of the basis for everything we think and everything we feel. And it affects, in particular, how you make decisions, how you connect and communicate with others, and how you manage really difficult situations. So it's kind of a key part of your overall physical and psychological health. And all the research have shown that if you have a positive emotional well-being, you actually lower your risk of certain chronic diseases, and you can even recover quicker from illness.
Yeah, it's interesting that it ties into the physical as well as the emotional. Now, this other survey said that 9 out of 10 of us feel stressed at this time of year, and that's certainly understandable. How does that happen?
Yeah, so, you know, I think a lot of people know this. They feel pretty overwhelmed during the holiday season. There's a, you know, a million things going on. You're probably trying to manage a tight budget. A lot of people are right now. You know, you probably have a packed schedule with trying to finish up work and then also trying to fit in holiday parties and stuff. And then, you know, some people may have, let me say, complicated family dynamics that you might have to experience. And so, you know, people feel a lot of pressure. They want to host the perfect party. They want to choose all the right gifts. But that's a lot to really put on one person.
And the hunting seasons are open and fall fishing's here, you know, besides
yeah.
all
that. A whole bunch to do. I know.
Count me in on that overwhelm during the holiday season. What else makes this holiday time difficult?
Yeah, another thing that happens during the holidays is loneliness becomes very, very common this time of year. And that's especially true, you know, for people that live alone or maybe they live away from their families so they can't celebrate with them in person, or for people that maybe have recently lost a loved one. And so that can make the holidays even harder and really maybe not make you feel so festive, you know, but you're not alone in that at all.
Yeah, and how can our listeners help manage holiday stress? What's some suggestions?
Yeah, so one of the biggest things is kind of take a pause and reset your expectations. You know, your holidays don't have to be absolutely perfect. They're not going to look like those Hallmark movies you see on TV all the time. And you don't have to celebrate the same way each year. A lot of people kind of feel like they have these traditions that they have to repeat year over year. But people change and traditions can change as well. So you can actually adjust what you're doing, especially if you're feeling more stressed and that you can't get things done the way that you have in the past. You know, try to shift a little and find new ways to enjoy the holiday season.
And what would be your next tip?
Yeah, the other bit, this is really huge, is learn to say no. It's very difficult sometimes. You know, it may be, you know, baking cookies and cakes and stuff like that, or maybe hosting a big event and coordinating schedules for the families. You can have this huge to-do list, and you're trying to get it all done, you know, before the holidays hit and everything. And you might feel this pressure to accept all those invitations, but you've got to realize there's only a certain amount of time in the holiday season. You're not going to be able to fit absolutely everything in there, and so you want a little bit of time to rest and decompress it at the beginning of the year. And as you get further into the season, you want to, like I said, pause and think about your holiday priorities. You know, if you really want to spend time with your family, focus on spending time with your family. You know, if you want to help out in the community, do that, but make sure you take that time to relax a little bit as well, because that's going to actually help you enjoy the holiday season a little bit better.
And how about tip number 3?
Yeah, so, you know, you may be focusing on making the holidays special for yourself or for others, but you don't want to forget about yourself. And so if you start feeling really overwhelmed, you know, again, pause. Sit down, make a cup of tea. You know, it's too hot to drink cocoa right now, but maybe watch a movie or get out and walk around the neighborhood. Just take 15 or 20 minutes to unwind, and that can really help you recharge and feel a whole lot better.
Yeah, a little bit later on, I want to talk to you about that movie watching. I had another interesting guest on this week that said that actually there's some physical changes that happen with some serotonin in the brain if, in fact, you watch Christmas movies and listen to Christmas music. Was very interesting. Anyway, we're talking with Dr. Brent Wallace, about emotional well-being during the holidays. We'll be back to continue this conversation. But first, we've got to take a look at traffic. Joe Cardosi does it for us in the WWL Traffic Center. And welcome back into WWL's First News. We're talking with the Chief Medical Officer of People's Health, Dr. Brent Wallace, about emotional health and the holidays. Dr. B, one of the things that causes stress is the financial aspect of the holidays. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, that's a huge problem, especially right now. And you know, the thing to remember is you don't have to pick the biggest gift or the most expensive gift. You know, people just kind of want to know that you're thinking about them. So you can even try something homemade. And it sounds a little bit cliched, but sometimes just helping people out can be really beneficial to them. You know, maybe if you've got kids, offer to babysit for them or help them out with some chores, or, you know, maybe make them their favorite meal or a dessert. And then volunteering is really great too. You know, it's an opportunity to get out into the community and help others as well. And all of those things are free.
Absolutely. Great suggestions, Doc. Tell us about loneliness. People suffer from that during these times.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing you want to do is try to find ways to stay connected with the people that are in your lives. And you can do that in a lot of different ways. You know, technology really helps. Schedule phone calls. I heard you just talking about phone phobia, but it's a great opportunity to call somebody on the phone, do a video chat with them, and send text messages and holiday cards. You know, that can be a really good way to connect with people that are not immediately close to you. And, you know, try to do some things to get out to. Like I said, volunteering is really a great thing. If you have a church that you go to, usually they're very festive, decorated, and a lot of people there, that may be another opportunity. And then for our older adults, there's a wonderful local councils on aging all over our area, and they have tons of events during the holidays, so reach out to them as well.
How else can you take care of emotional well-being, and what other habits are important?
Yeah, this is really important, too. People get all caught up in the craziness of everything, and they forget really the basics. And one of those is trying to stay healthy during this time period. So, you know, don't let your diet completely go out the door. It's okay to cheat a little bit, but you want to make sure you're still eating nutritious foods, that you're getting a little bit of exercise as well is really critical, because that's going to help you work off the stress. You know, after your big Christmas meal, walk around the block, get some fresh air. That's going to make you feel more grounded.
And what about your last tip? People should not be afraid to ask for help if they feel like they need it, or get someone they know help.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, like I said, loneliness is very prevalent during this time period, and it can become extremely severe. So if you are feeling really intense feelings of loneliness, or one of your family members are, you know, it's very important to talk with them, but there are options for help. You can absolutely reach out to a healthcare provider. You can reach out to your primary care physician. And keep in mind that there is a crisis support line, and it is used pretty frequently during this time period. It's very simple. You actually just call or text 988, and that's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that can actually connect you with somebody that can provide a little bit of telephonic counseling for you and help you talk through things. So keep that in mind always.
And if someone wants to find out more about People's Health?
Yeah, so, you know, we've got a wonderful Medicare Center right in Metairie on Veterans Boulevard. It's right next to Trader Joe's, and you can always come in there. We actually have a lot of holiday events. We have a lot of health-based educational events as well. So you can check out our website at peopleshealth.com, or actually stop by and see us. We'd love to see you.
Any last words on emotional well-being?
Yeah, just remember, like I said, to enjoy the holidays. This is a really wonderful time of year. It can be difficult for some people, but like I said at the beginning, you know, pause, kind of think about what you need to get done. Don't try to cram it all in, and really just, you know, try to enjoy it and spend some time with friends if you
can. And remember that emotional well-being and the physical well-being, they both complement each other.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's really important. If you feel happy, then your body's going to be happy, and that's going to help you with everything.
Very good. What a pleasure. Thanks for talking with us, Dr. B, and hopefully help some people. I'm sure a lot of them can identify with some of the suggestions and tips you put out there.
Absolutely. Have a great holiday, Don.
You do the same. All right, that's Dr. B, Dr. Brent Wallace, the Chief Medical Officer of People's Health. When we come back after the news, Sheriff Joe Lapinto joins us to talk about flying drones all over Jefferson Parish. We'll be back to do that, but first it's time for WWL's First News. Yeah, feeling like a fish and game reporter trapped in a news talk host's body. In for Tommy Tucker. Joining us now is Sheriff Joey Lapinto, Jefferson Parish Sheriff, to talk about his new drone patrol. Hey, Joey, how you doing? Long time no talk.
Doing great, Don. How about yourself? You doing great?
Good. You had any good fishing or hunting trips this season?
I've made a few hunting trips. I haven't been fishing in a while, but I'll get back out on the water. You know, it's about time.
You got a little duck hunting in?
I did a little wood duck hunting the other day with my son. He killed a few. I was happy. But I've got a couple trips during the holidays that I'm going to try to make.
Very good. Very good. All right. So now you're putting eyes up in the sky with a drone patrol. Tell us about that.
I tell you what, Don, it is a game changer in really law enforcement. I mean, drones are not new technology, right? We've used drones on a JPSO basis for the last 20 years. But generally speaking, it's a drone in the back of someone's car that, you know, hey, we need a perimeter set up on the person that ran from us. That person gets called. 30 minutes later, he arrives on scene and puts a drone up in the air and sees if the person was hiding out somewhere, right? And or missing person, same thing. You're 30 minutes behind any time. Where this is what we really call as a drone as a first responder. So we have charging docks. Self-sustaining, heated, air-conditioned docks that have 23 drones spread out around the unincorporated areas of Jefferson Parish, all run from one central location. So at the central location, you have deputies that have the ability to listen to the 911 calls that are coming in, hear them before they're even dispatched to the policeman out on the street, and make a decision of whether they're going to launch on that particular call. And they're able to launch, get on scene before our deputies get there, and be able to give that eyes in the skies review. Hey, yes, the person just came out of the store, whether it's an armed robbery suspect, they're fleeing down the street. You know, police are always reactionary, right? You know, we're getting a call after the fact, and our job is to respond. So response time is crucial, because whether you're in a car or walking, if you're in one place 5 minutes later, you're another half a mile away. And so the ability for us to be there quickly gives us a lot better opportunity to make arrest when warranted. And certainly we've seen that in the last month and a half that we've had these drones operational.
That's understandable. Has this created a new position in law enforcement, a drone operator? I've got visions of them sitting in some type of a studio with all these controls and they can operate those drones. Does that require special training, and is it new positions that are opening up?
It does. I will say all of our operators as of this time are Part 107 pilots, drone pilots. So we have to have certain FAA training, but they're also deputies. They're also post-certified deputies, because I need somebody that can communicate to the people on the ground what they need to know. You know, hey, I need you to go to this corner. I need you to go to this, you know, watch out, because it looks like I got a heat signature underneath this tree, right? And so I want them to think from a tactical standpoint, but also have the proper license just for a pilot. So it's not just having a pilot's license to be able to fly a drone. Look, let's be real. These pilots, I mean, these drones, they fly themselves for the most part, right? All right. You do is hit the location of the call, and it takes off and flies autonomously to the location, to the GPS location, and they take over once they're on scene to get it in the position that they want or the camera angle that they want to be able to locate and call out the information that they need to. But all of them are Part 107 pilots.
Well, there's been more than 60 arrests since you put the program in effect. Can you give me one memorable case to give us the story of what it did, how it was accomplished?
I mean, give you an example of how it works, right? We had a stolen vehicle that hit on one of our ALPR cameras that went into a parking lot, but we didn't know where it was. Drone went onto that scene, located it parked in the parking lot. The individuals that were in that car were in the store. They were in the store, so the drone just sat there for 30 minutes waiting for them to come out. That time, deputies were able to get in the surrounding area and wait for two individuals that walked out, got into the stolen car, and as soon as they went to pull off, we were able to pull in, box them in, and they tried to run, but we ended up making an apprehension off of it, right? Foot chases, it's not about who's faster or who can outrun the radio. Yes, last week we had a shoplifter that jumped into a bed of a pickup truck hiding from the police. The policeman probably would have ran right by him if he didn't see him jump into the bed of the pickup truck, which he didn't, but the drone did. And so sure enough, the guy's laying in the back of the pickup truck, and he looks up and he sees the drone. And you can see he had like the moment, you know, yep, the eye in the sky sees everything. So it's certainly worked out to our benefit, and it's changing the game for us.
Yeah, they're have infinite patience, and they work in all the weather. And, boy, what an addition it is. Well, Joey, you know, these things can also help. I see a use for, like, lost children. Or you remember we had the guy lost in the Barataria Wildlife Refuge over there, and he was lost in there. These drones could certainly help with that.
We did. In fact,
You open the fridge. There's nothing there. So what's it going to be? Greasy pizza? Sad drive-through burgers? Dish by Blue Apron is for nights like that. These are the pre-made meals of your dreams. At least 20 grams of protein, no artificial flavors or colors, no chopping, no cleanup, no guilt. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. It's about getting the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. And to find candidates who match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. Stop struggling to get your job post even seen on other sites. Give your job the best chance to be seen with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. They help you stand out and hire quality candidates who can drive the results you need. Sponsored Jobs boost your post for quality candidates so you can reach the exact people you want faster. Join the 1.6 million companies that sponsor their jobs with Indeed. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. You know, one of the perks about having four kids that you know about is actually getting a direct line to the big man up north. Mm-hmm. And this year, he wants you to know the best gift that you can give someone is the gift of Mint Mobile's unlimited wireless for $15 a month. Now, you don't even need to wrap it. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
The same week that New Orleans lost that young autistic kid in New Orleans East, we had a similar autistic kid that went missing from a house, and we ended up dispatching 30 officers over there to start going door to door, knocking door to door, and we had a drone, team en route and got there and started, putting it up and searching the backyards and all that. But certainly, if we get that phone call now, we just had a runaway that did the same thing, ran away from home. We got the call. We were able to locate her a half a mile away from the house before she even got anywhere. And instead of feeding our Facebook feeds with this person's missing, this person's missing, they were back at the house within 15 minutes of them leaving.
Yeah, no more milk carton IDs. Have you had a shots fired at drone yet?
No, we haven't had it. I mean, look, you'd have to be a really good shot for that. But that being said, who knows? But it's still, from a standpoint, it's giving our officers a whole lot more safety. Definitely worth that. So it gives them a lot.
Joey, to wrap up here, I know a lot of law enforcement agencies throughout the parishes cooperate with each other's and, in water teams and dive teams. I guess if another parish gets in a bind and they need this, they could contact you and give them some help with your drones.
The drones of the first responder are really set for about a 2-mile radius of the docking station that they're in.
Okay.
Right. Now that doesn't mean we help out agencies all the time with our other drones, where we respond to them and are able to get up in the air and help them out. So we certainly use a lot of drones for other agencies, but that's not what this is made for. This is made for fast response of the areas that we patrol.
All right, asking for a friend who's texting in, do these drones have missiles?
No, they don't have missiles. They don't have guns. They got a light on it and a parachute on them.
Joey, I know you got to run, man. Thanks for spending some time and talking with us, and congratulations for putting that out there. The DFR, the Drone First Responder Program, technology is here, and certainly for the better.
Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas, Joey. Hope you get some good fishing and hunting in. All right, when we come back after this, we'll get to some of your text messages. Also, right after the top of the hour news, we're going to be talking to Julia Davis. Would you ever yell at your boss? Well, we're back on those Gen Zers again. They're having outbursts at work. If you're a manager, has that happened to you? Or if you're an employee, have you ever yelled or screamed at your boss? I'd like to hear from you. Our talking text line, 504-260-1870. That's Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text, 504-260-1870. 260-1870. We're back right after this. And a listener brought this up. Don't forget to rewind. The Odyssey app lets you jump back to the moments you miss on any show on WWL. You can download the free Odyssey app, search for WWL, then get started. You can listen or re-listen to all the WWL guest commentary or shows you love when you want to, including the ones we've had this week. The Menhaden industry issue had a lot of people wanted to listen to that over again. Also this morning, we had the Bell Chase Bridgegate conversation with the state representative. Any of those shows you miss, you can always catch them by doing the rewind on WWL. All right, we're hoping to make contact with Julia Davis. She had an unexpected delay come up, so hopefully we'll be joined by her. But we got her on to talk about those Gen Zers again. We talked about experiencing telephobia. Now we're going to talk about 30% of them, 1 out of 3, have admitted that they yell at their boss. A recent survey said that many young professionals are challenging traditional expectations around workplace behavior. Surveyed 1,200 full-time Gen Z workers by professional resume templates platform ResumeTemplates.com found that about 1 in 3, 32% to be exact, say they have yelled at their boss, and half say they regularly talk negatively about their manager to co-workers. And to talk with us more about that is Julia Davis, a leadership expert and the host of a podcast, Growth and Grit, the podcast. Julia, thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Tell me about your podcast, Growth and Grit.
Yeah, so I developed this podcast for young entrepreneurs that were trying to build and develop businesses, just to help them understand that anyone who builds anything goes through challenges and problems and issues and all the things, because I think sometimes we believe we're the only one that's having an issue when it's reality, it's everybody.
You know? Yeah. I've heard from several of them this morning about this. We're not only talking about outbursts, about yelling at your boss, but also breakdowns. I guess you call it employee crumbling or breaking down. How does a boss handle both of those situations, if they get yelled at or they've got an employee that's in their office crying?
I think, you know, obviously that's a 911 situation where the first thing you do is just handle whatever's going on with that person and give them some empathy and help them figure out, like, what can I do for this person right now to help them either maybe take a day off or have a mental break from whatever's going on. And then the secondary thing that you would do as a business owner or an employer is look at your system and figure out what led to this, because people typically only break down when they feel extremely unheard or if they have some type of, you know, festering problem that they just didn't feel like they could talk to their boss about.
I've got a comment in from a listener that says, after years as a supervisor slash manager, I learned that insubordination cannot and should not ever be tolerated. If you are consistent and fair across the board with your subordinates, you should be on solid footing. I only once had to deal with this and felt no remorse in applying discipline by counseling and writing up the offender. If allowed to continue, it is perceived as acceptable behavior and will undermine your operation in short order. And I would swear that's my daughter, Cherie, wrote that. What are your thoughts on that comment, Julie?
I agree. I think, you know, people don't always understand that there is a place to work and stay focused, and then there's a place to handle personal issues, and they should not overlap. I think a lot of times people bring their whole, you know, everything is on the media these days, and your whole life is broadcasted on social media. So it's really easy for things to kind of blur the lines and pull it in. But in reality, if you have a job to do and you have work to be done, you should be able to compartmentalize and figure out how to get that done without other things interfering with it. And it's just, it's something I think we've lost over time. So I think you do have to put a hard line and say, this is unacceptable behavior, but I can understand that you're going through it. So how much time off do you need? You know?
I've got another text came in, and maybe restraint is the best policy. This one said, in relationship with their boss, I wanted to, but I always chose to walk away and let them figure out what they did wrong or just remain clueless. wanted to yell at the boss, but that would have gone nowhere. I guess restraint in many cases is the best policy.
Yes, I do think that sometimes it's called for, especially if you're dealing with a boss where you know that no matter what you do, it's not going to move the needle. But if somebody is willing and open to feedback, I think a good approach would just say, hey, I'm really frustrated about this. Are you open to some feedback about the process? And if they say no, then leave it and say, okay, no problem. You can always find a different job. But if they say yes, then I would say give them the feedback, because it could be a fundamental piece of the process that's broken that needs to be fixed.
I have some more texts coming in from listeners. This one says, yelling at the boss wouldn't go over well in the Marine Corps. KP for life.
Oh, my gosh. That's so true.
KP, yeah, so true. Kitchen, I mean, patrol. I've been there, done that. Not a pleasure at all.
That's so true. Yeah, you couldn't. In the military, that would not fly.
Another one says, I'm so happy to be retired. If an employee yelled at me, they'd be out on their A. Now, that's short and to the point.
Yeah, not everybody functions in the same way, so I can, you know, I can understand that approach too. It just depends on the environment that you work in, how much tolerance you have for that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, here's another one says, I can't believe I'm listening to what this topic seems to be. I'll be damned if I'm cuddling an adult who doesn't know how to be an adult.
Oh, man. It's definitely a different culture. You know, every generation is slightly different, and I don't think that maybe the newer generations grow up with as much fear of authority as some of the other generations did.
What do you think the difference is in this Gen Z generation? Is it the advent of the technology, the social media, the texting, the laptops, the constant digital communication, stuff coming in and going out at a rapid pace?
Yeah, this is my personal opinion, but I think growing up in an age where social media is so prevalent, people get justified in their negative so quickly. So if you have a negative opinion, you have 20,000 people or even 15 that back you up to say, you're right to feel that way. That was a problem. This is justified, right? So when you have sometimes poor behavior justified, that's a really dangerous scenario, right? Because no one's saying like, hey, maybe you're the issue. Instead, people are saying, hey, you're right to feel that way without ever hearing the other side of the story.
Yeah. What about some preventative measures to help prevent that? I mean, maybe on the boss's part, there's some things you can do to prevent them from feeling like they want to yell at you.
I think, you know, quarterly reports or quarterly evaluations, anytime you can get face-to-face with your people, I think yelling happens significantly less when you do like a quarterly sit down with every person to say, hey, let's evaluate your performance. Let's evaluate what's going on in your job. What's easy? What's hard? How can I adjust anything? And if they're like, yeah, this is all really hard and I know that's just part of the job, I can redirect them into a new career at that point. Or if they say, no, it's all great, everything's good, then we know we're moving in the right direction. So I do think the more face-to-face evaluations you can have throughout the year prevent stuff like this from boiling over.
Yeah, that way if they've got a bone to pick, let them get it out in a professional,
right,
calm manner rather than letting it build up and then all of exploding on the boss.
Exactly, because a lot of these people probably just don't ever have FaceTime with the person in charge, and then when they do, it's been 6 years of accumulated aggravation.
From the employee standpoint, though, sometimes you've got a boss that isn't so great, and the fault is really lies on them. They've got too high expectations, they're too demanding, rude to employees. What should the employee do?
Quit.
Find another job, huh?
Exactly. Go find another job. You don't have to work for anyone you don't like, you don't want to work with. There's a ton of opportunities out there. Just leave that job, but leave it amicably and don't ruin your own reputation by dragging them through the mud. Just say, hey, it's not for me. Your leadership style is not my style. Have a great day. Get out of there.
Got some more text from the listeners. This one says, yelling at the boss is unacceptable, and the supervisor also must maintain a professional level to deserve respect. Never yell or curse at an employee. Good advice.
I agree with that. I think that, yeah, absolutely. I think that as an employer, you got to set the standard for the behavior you want to see in your people. And that brings up another good point, because maybe the boss is the one yelling and cursing at people, and so the employees just think that's an acceptable part of the culture. You know, it could be a bad example.
And then we have this one. Work is work and not personal. It's just what you have to do at work. I don't know. That's not the greatest job
yeah.
environment, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, you want to build relationships for sure.
Absolutely. Got a lot of people that say they're glad they're retired and not dealing with it at all
yeah.
anymore. Well, that's
yeah,
another answer too, huh?
Yeah,
Julia, we got to run. Thank you so much for joining
thanks
us.
So
and
much.
Growth and Grit, that's the podcast, correct?
That's it. Yep, thanks
right.
so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
All righty. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to Jim Cook, President and CEO of the New Orleans Ernest N. Morial Convention Center, about NOLA Christmas Fest starting this weekend. Something about bumper cars on ice? I want to find out more about that. That sounds like fun. We'll be right back after this. And welcome back in on this Thursday morning. We're joined now by Jim Cook, the President and CEO of the New Orleans Ernest N. Morial Convention Center, because NOLA Christmas Fest is starting this weekend. Jim, thanks for taking some time to talk with us about this great event coming up.
Good morning, Don. Great to be with you. Thank you.
Tell us about the event. What are the dates and times when people can come down there and take part in the celebration?
Sure. So the NOLA Christmas Fest will open this Saturday at 11 o'clock. This marks our 12th anniversary of hosting this event, and our keynote sponsor is Coca-Cola. We're grateful to have them back with us again this year. And it will be in halls H, I, and J, which are the upriver side of the convention center, directly across from the large parking lot that you can access off Calliope or Convention Center Boulevard.
Jim, take me through the setup for the Christmas Fest. Once I come through the gate, what am I going to be able to do and see there?
Sure. Once you come in, you'll be in awe of stepping into 300,000 square feet of decorated winter wonderland space. And we'll have, once again, we'll have our ice skating rink. We have giant ice slides. We have indoor carnival rides. And, you know, the scale of the convention center allows us to do things like that. We have a Ferris wheel and some swings and lots of other sort of large-scale carnival rides for the kids. We have activities for the kids throughout that will be happening. We also have mini-golf, so a lot to do and a lot of opportunity, plus plenty of picture-taking opportunities for the families.
What about the ice bumper cars? I'm interested in that. I remember the bumper cars out at Pontchartrain Beach. So much fun.
This is new this year, and we're excited to have it. I'm still trying to wrap my head around it, but the what the team has told me is that those that are smaller and lighter will have the advantage of being able to move a little faster. So,
I'm in trouble.
So, yeah, that's what I said. But yeah, we're looking forward to it. It's a fun idea. I guess they run on wheels, but they're on ice, and so I think different than those that are on the old style track. Maybe the bumps aren't as severe for this, but we're looking forward to seeing how it goes.
What's it like? What's the goal of riding? Is it just to hit as many people as you can and survive?
Or yeah, I think it's a lot like the one that's not on ice.
That'd be interesting to see that. Maybe we can get some video and show that on there. What is this going to cost us to get in for, say, a family?
Sure. So the prices are different based on the day of the week, but on weekdays it is $25, and on weekends it's $30. The ticket price gets you into a half day session. So there's the morning session, which is 11 to 3:30, and then there's afternoon sessions afternoon evening that start 4:30 and go until 9 p.m. So once you're in, you're welcome to stay for the whole session.
And what particularly is there in store for kids? You know, kids and Christmas just go hand in hand. They're in such awe, and I love to watch them when they see some of those displays.
Right. So we have new this year, we've actually partnered with the Louisiana Children's Museum, and they're helping to engage with us. They're creating a literacy nook and winter theme books. There's holiday cornhole. There's a winter sensory bin with building a snowflake catcher. So lots of activities for the young ones. For those that are a little older, we've got Train Like an Elf, so we can burn a little energy learning how to train like an elf and work your way through the elf obstacle course, and including a little elf limbo, which I think my elf limbo days are far behind me, but I'm sure the littles will enjoy it.
What's in store for people if they want to grab a bite to eat down there?
Yeah, we have our actually several different food opportunities throughout the experience, and then we also have a lounge for the adults that are coming in for an opportunity to get a seasonal cocktail and also a chance to watch, if you're here on Sunday, to watch the Saints game. So we'll have TVs there showing events. So, you know, you don't have to miss out on anything that's happening while you're here.
Is there an age limit on the face painting? I've got some friends I want to bring in there to get their faces painted.
I don't expect any age limits. I think you're good.
And cookie decorating's good, too.
That's right.
The day? It opens up Saturday. How long will it be running?
Yep, that's right. So it opens up on Saturday, and it will run through the 28th.
Very good. Jim, can you stay with me through
or
the break?
29th.
I wanna, 20th through 29th. If you can stay with me through the break, when we come back, I want to maybe give us a little bit of advance notice, a sneak preview on what's coming up in 2026. That convention center is so versatile. There's so many different variations. It's not just for conventions. There's a lot of other things go on there. We're talking with Jim Cook. He's the president and CEO of the New Orleans Convention Center, and we'll be right back after this. And welcome back in. Don Dubuque filling in for Tommy Tucker this week. Tommy will be back with you on Monday. He'll be back with you for a little brief stint tomorrow. We're going to hear from Tommy, too. So stay tuned for that. Of course, right now we're talking about the Ernest Morial Convention Center. The president and CEO is joining us, Jim Cook, and we're talking about the NOLA Christmas Fest, one of the events that's kicking off tomorrow there. We'll be going all the way through the 29th of December. Jim, I don't know when the convention center was built, if it was built to accommodate all the different shows and events that take place there. Tell us about all the different events that have been held in the convention center.
Sure. It's you know, we were built back when Mayor Morial was envisioning it. The idea was to create an economic engine for the city and a way to build economic prosperity across the community. And so the idea is we would bring in conventions and events as one of the key focus, and that helps to fill the hotels and keep the restaurants full and bring folks to work in transportation and in event management and all of the other areas that touch it. But in addition to that, because the way the halls are built, the halls are really just cement floor with, you know, appropriate power and stuff, and then just large space. And we were intentionally built to allow the halls to be combined in different ways. And that gives us an enormous amount of flexibility to host everything from, you know, conventions where you're in a meeting room with the chairs lined up to where you're in a trade show with booths running across, or, as we have coming up this April, you have basketball courts all throughout the center, and you have multiple, you know, a major basketball tournament happening. We acted as the training facility for one of the professional football teams that came in to play against the Saints, and they put about 50 yards of turf down and ran practice drills here at the center. So, we can handle all kinds of things, from formal to sporting to events like we're hosting with the NOLA Christmas Fest this weekend.
Yeah, there's been several cooking events and competitions, and I've been to boat shows there that have worked out very well. Kind of give us a rundown starting in January of 2026. What can we look forward to for the year?
So it's we're looking at close to 100 events again this year. We expect to be a little bit more by the time the year all comes through. We did about 125 this year. We have, we open with the typical Sugar Bowl activity moving in, and then shifting right into January with our convention season kicking off. This summer, we actually are hosting Bocuse d'Or is coming back, which is a big culinary competition. It's a global competition among professional chefs and truly the best of the best. And the winners from the event here will move on to Paris for the finals. So we hosted this 2 years ago. We're excited to have them back. There's things that are happening throughout. You know, we're eager to see Essence come back again this summer and join us for their annual event. We host for the Essence Festival close to 150,000 people for the events that are held here at the center. So lots happening again, and we're looking forward to that. I mentioned the basketball. We have a girls basketball tournament that's produced by Nike, and it's one of the elite competitions in the country that is choosing to come here to New Orleans this year. And we're very excited about welcoming them this coming April.
And when will that be?
That'll be late April, early May. So it's in, I believe, the week between Jazz Fest weekends.
You know, Jim, some of the people that I kind of have an inside communication and contact with that have come here and have put on demonstrations and booths in the conventions, they say they love coming to New Orleans. One of the reasons is everything is so close. They say they go to other cities for these type of events, and they might have a 30-minute drive from the motel to where they got to go to some of these events, and they say it's also, concentrated. It's just easy to walk around and get to everything. And a lot of people in the media say the same thing. Is that one of your pitches when you guys are offering up the center for use?
Oh, absolutely. And when you think about, you know, the hotel inventory that's here in the CBD and in the warehouse district, and then, you know, it's barely a mile to get from the convention center all the way to the Superdome. And so, and over to the French Quarter, you're less, you know, a mile to the far side of the convention, to the far side of the French Quarter, like, let's say, moving into the Barony and Bywater. So the ability to just walk to everything that you would want, whether it's restaurant or shopping or museum or art gallery, is all right here. In fact, this week we have hosted the American Geophysical Union, which is 20,000 geophysicists. So we've got some very smart people in the building right now. And they're doing everything from, how the world, how the earth is created to, or structured to how the, what's happening out in space. So, but they are everywhere. I'm sure folks have seen them around every day at lunch. They swarm the restaurants in the warehouse district and work their way into the CBD. It's great having them here. They've been here for almost a whole week. And it's the type of thing like this that, you know, literally in the center of December when not as many people are meeting, we were able to bring just, you know, literally thousands of people to work to take care of this.
Yeah, those geophysicists have a reputation of partying real hard, I can tell you that. There's 20,000 of them in town. It's got to be wild. Jim, what else do y'all pitch when you go out? Because you're very successful. It seems to be booked year-round. And how far out does a business or a convention have to book you guys?
So a large one like this geophysicist is usually a 10-year, 8 to 10-year running room, and can even be longer. We have conventions that are definite in New Orleans for 2033, 2034, and it seems like that's forever away. But when you need to put together a block of, you know, 18,000 or 20,000 rooms, you have to find a city where hotels have that much inventory available. And so they have to take it off the shelf early to do that. For smaller events, it's a little easier to do it with a five-year window. And then, you know, sometimes we get lucky, like this Nike competition I told you about that actually booked in 2025 and are coming in 2026. And that's very rare for a large event, but we love it when it happens because it means we had the space and now we got to put somebody in.
You know, Jim, in the business I'm in, my primary coverage is on the outdoor aspects, the fishing and the hunting, and they have shows, and I get an awful lot of invitations because they want the media there to go back and showcase what they have. How have you been with the media participation? I don't watch a lot of out-of-town media, so I don't know. Do you get a lot of coverage from media on your events?
We do, depending on the type of event. Some shows, depending on who they are, don't push too much, or they have their own media program that they want to run. And then others get more media. But we, you know, especially locally, we love to talk about what's happening here because it feels, and as I've sort of learning this organization from the inside versus from the outside, you know, that many of our neighbors don't really understand what happens here and how much happens here. So I love being able to talk about it and appreciate the time with you.
And what are some of the areas around the country that you get a lot of participation from that seem to be just abnormally more events come from one particular part of the country?
We do a lot of associations, and so many of them are headquartered in either the D.C. area or the Chicago area. And so the meeting planners or the association is based in many times one of those two spots. And then on the corporate side, we see more and more now from the West Coast, especially when technology is involved. So we see more coming that way. But the Northeast, when it's either medical or other associations that are based in D.C. or out of the Boston area, sometimes on the medical or New Jersey area, New York area, when it's financial or pharmaceutical.
Jim, if there was one wish for 2026 that you could get granted that would help you, something that maybe you get questioned on from prospective visitors and convention organizers that you don't have, that you need. I mean, certainly you got the versatility of the building itself. The area is concentrated. It's compact. The food is a huge draw for out-of-town visitors. And there's a historic aspect to the city of New Orleans, too. What is it that you seem to be lacking that maybe you could use some help that would even book the more participation in the facility?
The big project that we're working on right now that is a real competitive challenge for us is having a headquarter hotel directly either at the convention center that's a new build product like they're putting in so many other cities. So our key competitive cities like, you know, historically the big ones like Chicago and San Francisco, et cetera, we're now competing heavily with Nashville and competing with Indianapolis and competing with Atlanta in a different way because they have built hotels, brand new hotels, right next to their convention centers. And that's what our customers are asking for. They're looking for a new hotel. So we've been working with Omni Hotels on a potential headquarter hotel project, and our authority here has committed to a development agreement where working our way through that process. But if we could make this happen, this would be the first new convention hotel in our city in over 40 years. And it's a type of thing that our customers are looking for because they're seeing it in other cities. So we're very, you know, in terms of my wish for next year, it would be that we could begin to break ground and make this project happen.
And what type of time span would you be looking at?
We'd love to be able to break ground sometime in the middle of 2026. We have a goal of trying to complete this hotel by early 2030.
Excellent. Well, Jim, you got a lot going on down there, and we're kicking it all off with the NOLA Christmas Fest this weekend. I want to thank you for taking time and talking about this facility that certainly is an economic engine and drives the tourism, and the tourism drives it, and we're very proud of it, and y'all do a good job with it. And thanks for being with us.
Thank you. And for those that are thinking about NOLA Christmas Fest, you can find us at NOLAChristmasFest.com.
All right. Look for me on the ice bumper cars. I'll be at the ice bumper car. Thanks, Jim. All right. That's Jim Cook. There he goes.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast. And if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit DetectTheSOS.com today to learn more.
This holiday season, choose gifts that feel thoughtful and practical with Omaha Steaks. Whether you're hosting or gifting, they deliver the world's best steak experience, and it makes you look like you planned way ahead. They've got USDA-certified tender steaks, juicy burgers, comfort meals, and tons more. Gifting Omaha Steaks is honestly one of the easiest wins. Everything arrives beautifully packaged, super convenient, and the quality is unbelievable. Their filet mignons are some of the most tender I've ever had. And the variety means you can personalize every gift. Plus, orders placed by 6 p.m. Eastern ship same day. And everything is backed by their 100% guarantee. It's holiday gifting made simple. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All The Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code T-Bone at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, code T-Bone.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.